It is often at the darkest hour that a small flame illuminates the void. It warms and heals the soul. Sometimes that small flame grows into a raging inferno which promises to consume the world. This is the quest for power.
Welcome to the Quest for Power campaign, Legends of the Lost Kingdoms, where we are raiding and reviewing the monarchs of the Celtic Anglo Isles from the early High Kings of Ireland to sometime before the rise of Charlemagne.
Charlemagne who?
As always, I am your unreliable narrator host, and interrupting me on this adventure through the Legends of the Lost Kingdom is...
Roberto Moore.
Okay.
I am Roberto the Great.
Roberto's head has gotten bigger now. He has decided to call himself Moore, which means the Great. We'll let him. It's fine.
For now. We'll see whatever nickname I like later.
Yeah. And today, we are going to continue through the story arc of the prologue of Season 6.
Are we going to cover the person who killed Yugane?
I was just going to say... Well, I mean, yeah, we are going to cover Boba Fett. We have to cover
Boba Fett. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, anyway, Roberto, since we just recorded, you've got to know what happened last episode. So,
nope,
give us
no
a
clue.
Give us a quick summary.
So, we recorded 5 minutes ago and ended it. And I just completely forgot that Yugane Moore was the adopted son of Macha Mongruath. And he ended up killing the Red King after he killed Macha Mongruath. And then I further on forgot that he then had 26 kids with his wife, Kasair. 25 kids with his wife, Kasair. Thank you, Michael. So that poor woman, who I also forgot about, went through that. Then he apparently ruled from Ireland to some part of Western Europe and Gaul, according to Michael. And then he went through our rounds, and the dice deemed him to be a lesser noble, much to my chagrin. And then I adopted his thing because I'm better than him because I rolled for him.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. You forgot he was assassinated by his own brother, Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. Yeah, Boba Fett killed him.
It's spelled B-O-D-B Chad, but we decided last episode that it's Boba Fett, so...
Boba Fett. You can see where you get Boba Fett from that.
We're just doing Boba Fett.
Boba Fett sounds nicer, and it's easier to pronounce. So just imagine Temuera Morrison just killing this guy.
I mean, that's pretty, yeah.
That's actually pretty sick.
Boba Fett killing Yugane Moore, that's actually, he must have had, like, a bounty on him or something.
This is the way. Even though it's the wrong...
So let's get into the reign of Boba Fett after he overthrows the crime lords of Tatooine.
Okay, let's go.
He breaks the unbreakable vow and ascends the throne of Tara. How do you think this is going to go for him? I mean, is he going to get away with breaking an ironclad oath?
No. If Game of Thrones is anything to go by, this is not going to end well.
How long do you think he reigned for?
A year. 2 years?
He reigned for a whole day and a half.
This, in fact, was not a good idea.
His nephew, Logair Lor, came up to him with Nathair and then pierced him through the heart, through his ribs, with the same dagger that he used to kill Yugane.
Nathair.
For those who are unaware, Nathair is the dagger that kills all of the High Kings of Ireland.
I was going to say something fun, but I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
Oh, Nathair thirsts for blood.
There you go. It does thirst for blood. It is a demon artifact.
It only likes any...
High King blood, though.
Yeah, it can only take the blood of the king.
Or High Queen blood. It's not sexist. So, you know, you got that going for
you. Yeah, but when are we getting High Queen?
Never again.
So, yeah. It was like, it came back on. It was like, yeah, I only want men from now on. Maka was too good and pure for this. Man. Oh, that's the thing. Maka's soul got captured into it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And now she is only thirsting for the blood of High Kings.
The lore continues. I love it.
So that's added a few more points to Maka's legacy there.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
That's give her beautiful. A solid 20 and everything.
Immediately upon the ritualistic murder of his uncle, Logair ascended the throne of Tara. The throne of Tara, just so you know, whenever I say that, it's the High King's throne. The kingdom of Tara is the High King's kingdom. Mm-hmm. He immediately confirmed his siblings' income and the taxes that their father Ugain set down during his reign, each receiving a pretty princely share of income. They're pretty freaking wealthy, and they're doing fine, you know? They got
coming
pretty good wealth.
Coming out of my cage, and I've been doing just fine.
Not everyone was happy with this, though.
Was it another sibling that was unhappy?
Yeah. His brother Kobathok, Cole Bregg, coveted the throne of Tara.
Of course, though
literally everyone on it is killed by their successor. But I must have this throne.
Okay.
So each day that passes, Kobathok's jealousy grows and it consumes his every single thought. He wanted this more than life itself. Quite literally. His unhealthy obsession with the throne turned to madness and he turned to sickness. His brother, the king, completely unaware of what has made his brother sick, came to visit him and see what could be done to help his poor brother.
My poor brother, are you feeling okay? What can I do to help you? I'll do anything to make you sure you're better.
Yeah, pretty much. So, when Logair arrives to see his sickly brother, Kobathok, he looks so hurt because he sees his retinue with him. You know, the king has his retinue and he's like, you have always been suspicious of me. Look at this. You won't even visit me without an armed escort.
Yeah, how dare you, Lobathak?
And Logair claims, Logair, you are my brother, and I love you. Next time there will be no guards, I promise.
Oh.
Kobathok turns out never got better. His stress of not having the throne got the better of him, and he died.
What?
Yep. So upon receiving the sad news of the sudden death of his brother, the High King went to pay his respects to the brother he loved so much with his son Aiel and grandson Labraid. When he finally arrived, his brother was laying stiff as a board on the wooden plank, his eyes openly staring into the void. Overcome with grief and tears streaming down his cheeks, Logair bent over Kobathok's body and kissed him on the cheek. Suddenly, Kobathok came alive and stabbed him in the heart, pulling the blade from that killed their father, causing his royal blood to soak them both in crimson blood. He threw off his shocked and rapidly dying brother, who had gushing out of him, leapt off the wooden board and struck his nephew Aiel with the dagger before he had a chance to react. Kobathok, in a full fit of madness, clutching the bloody dagger, ordered the shocked little boy Labraid, who just saw his great uncle stab his grandfather, to stay still or he will gut him like a fish.
Yes, sir!
He then forced the boy to watch him carve out the hearts of both dying men's bodies as they screamed and passed out due to blood loss.
And then died.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Infamy going up.
Kobathok took the hearts in his hands and forced the traumatized beyond belief little boy to eat part of his father's beating heart and a mouthful of his grandfather's heart. The madman wasn't done. Just in case this little boy wasn't traumatized enough, he grabbed a mouse, I don't know why he did this, and stuffed it into the little boy's mouth and threatened him with the dagger dripping on his family's blood until he ate the mouse.
I have Nathair right here. If you do not eat that mouse, young Labraid, I will cut you with it and let it drink your blood.
So obviously, this would take like a lifetime and a lifetime and another lifetime of therapy just to cope with. And they didn't exactly have that in ancient
Ireland. So there's only one way that Labraid could cope with this.
Well, the trauma inflicted upon him was so psychologically damaging that the little boy couldn't even utter a sound from that moment on.
Oh, well.
Kobathok took the child as hostage and he ascended the throne of Tara. He so coveted that he needed to do all of this horrific, horrific stuff. This, by the way, this little scene here, this is going to be all of Irish history that we cover. I am about 4 more episodes in, and we still got more horrific stuff.
This is the first time I get something this detailed and this bloody. I have to give him points.
So the next part here, it has two separate stories that seem to contradict each other. I tried to use my accounting brain to put the pieces together like a puzzle to formulate a single narrative. I do this for everything in Ireland because they have Irish history is made up of a bunch of different stories. So basically what I do is I'm an accountant by trade. I'm going to use that skill and I'm going to try and reconcile all the narratives.
Yeah, so Michael's trying to make sure that the numbers on the left side and the numbers on the right side match. So make sure that it is
a correct
good thing. And then in the meantime, he's going to help me embezzle some stuff on the side. I mean, he's going to help me make sure the numbers are right.
Yeah. And if a penny is off, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind.
I only lost a penny, Michael. You can cut it out. You can drop it.
Seriously, I changed an entire narrative because one person was out of place and it didn't make sense. So I went down a rabbit hole and completely changed the narrative down the road. So, yeah.
And all of this because of one wrong person. Imagine how he feels about your money. This is the things he does for fun.
Yeah, this is
imagine when he's working. He's way worse. Wait, can you do my taxes?
I'm not a tax. Okay. We don't do that. I work for the government. It's fine. Anyway, after so thoroughly traumatizing LeBraid, I think he has traumatized LeBraid more than anyone I've ever heard traumatized in any of, like, podcasts. Like, that was horrific. He basically is like, I did my job. The child's not a threat. And he exiled him to a kingdom in Faramore in Munster to the King Scoriath. So he's like, not my problem. You feed this poor little wretch.
Oh my gosh.
Upon arriving at court, LeBraid tried to keep to himself and he spent most of his time reading in silence. The Faramore court affectionately called him the mute scholar.
He could read?
Huh. He could. What else was he going to do? He couldn't talk. And they called him the mute scholar.
Did they have an alphabet back then?
Gaelic.
Gaelic has an alphabet?
I don't know if it has an alphabet, but they have a written language. That's where all of these stuff comes from.
It does.
Like the original, the original stuff of this, I'm pretty sure, is all written in Gaelic.
The Irish Ebeteer. Yeah. Old Irish. Primitive Irish. Oh, they did have writing. What am I talking about?
Yeah, so like when all of this stuff gets translated to English, the reason why I might say something wrong is because of the translation errors are wild. And they can vastly differ. Even the people who are like the expert of the experts go, it could be that or it could be that. Mm-hmm. So again, we're unreliable here and I like to keep it that way.
I try to be good.
While he was in exile, King Scoriath's daughter Moriath took a liking to the man, and she kept finding to see excuses to see him while he was studying. Oh. How nice.
Oh.
Without speaking to each other, the princess's warm heart began to slowly tear down the barriers to this little boy's outside world.
She got to know him.
Slowly, through her patience, they became
friends.
She got
to really know him.
And as their time passed, their friendship smoldered into silent embers of love.
They got to very know each other.
Yeah, they did. Played little kissing games all over the castle. You know, that kind of exciting stuff. Their relationship was becoming quite suspicious to the queen and mother of Moriath. Apparently, the king didn't give a damn. So that the queen did, though. So as the two continued to grow up, she kept a very watchful eye on her daughter. They were young teenagers, probably around 13, from what I can guess. So they didn't exactly have TV or video games to keep them busy. So like most teenagers, their hormones were becoming quite active and they began sneaking kisses all around the castle and little games when no one was knowing. And their little childish game became a little more intense and physical as their lust for one another grew, but they never quite crossed the line yet. So these little stolen moments turned into years. The silent scholar had started to become of age. He was starting to get older, and he wanted out of Ireland. And despite his growing love for Moriath, he needed some time to work things out the medieval way. He has a lot of therapy to give. So he went to go see his grandmother, Cassair's Land, in Gaul.
And she had a box, and inside of that box was Nathair.
So, this was a little more than travel therapy. I'm guessing, though, his relationship with Moriath and the love that they share, he was giving a new lease on life. I'm thinking, like, her love for him and his love for her gave him something now to fight for. He was no longer this traumatized
little boy. A girl worth fighting for.
Dun, 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 dun. But the problem is, if his uncle got wind of him training as a warrior, his life could be in danger, as well as Moriath's and their entire kingdom, because she could be seen as the future of his children. So, you know, mother of his children. So the time Moriath and Labraid was growing short, and they both knew it. And that only blew oxygen on this invisible smoldering fire between them. The young couple approached the court bard, Craftini.
Craftini!
And Craftini, we'll call it Craftini. That's fun.
Cheese producer.
And they passed a persuasion check to get him to put the queen to sleep through his music.
I hear you're alive. How disappointing.
And the king must have been on campaign because they didn't really care about him. Nothing was mentioned.
Cole Bregg doesn't give two shits.
Just the queen.
As long as he doesn't trade,
yeah,
he's
so,
fine.
No, this isn't Cole Bregg. This is Scoriath, King Scoriath of Munster, where he went to.
Sorry.
So this is Lady Scoriath.
I'm sorry,
Lady
I thought
Scoriath.
He was still with Cobthak.
No, he's not with Cobthak. He's trying to get the hell out of there before Cobthak gets his greedy hands on him. So the night before Labraid left for Gaul, Craftini discreetly casted sleep on the queen as he played his magical harp for her. The enchanted strings put the queen into a nice, deep, magical sleep. And the two young lovers spent a magical evening under the stars, full of passion, exploring each other in the most intimate way possible, with their bodies intertwined until dawn broke the next morning.
Michael, keep it PG-13, yeah. Please.
When the morning came, Moriath had tears in her eyes, but understanding in her heart as her mute love left for Gaul. So what I'm going to say here is the sources say they were wed the next day because of this event. Because they had sex. But these sources are holier than thou Christian monks who could not even imagine a man and a woman with having sex without being forced into a marriage. The reason I don't believe they were wed is because she didn't go to Gaul with him. And at that time, she probably would have had they been married.
So he pulled a one-night stand and just left. How dare he? What a horrible play.
Terrible. So, upon arriving in Gaul, Labraid was brought forth to a Gallic king where the guards told him, hey, this is the heir to the throne of Ireland. And so to their credit, the Gallic court treated him like a prince with great honor. As an adolescent in Gaul, he grew into a man as a Gallic noble. When I'm talking a Gallic noble, lot less books, more training of war.
Skull!
He excelled in his new life. Despite being a mute, his martial prowess was so effective that the king made him commander of the army.
He had such a way with words, you know?
He served with great honor and courage. Meanwhile, back in Ireland, Moriath's love for Labraid didn't dwindle, but it burned hotter with each day that passed without him. Her longing was poured out into the lyrics of a long-lost love for Labraid, which she kept hidden away.
I miss you so much, my dear.
So probably after fighting tooth and nail to not be forced into another marriage with another man, she took life into her own hands. Moriath sent for her father's bard, Craftini.
Who? Who's bard? You said
bothers. Craftini. Oh.
No,
Jesus.
There's no Jesus in this place yet.
According to the monks, Jesus is coming. I mean, he did with Mary of Magdala, but that's a whole other topic.
I don't know how we they both just started laughing at the same time.
I was like, shit. Totally unintentional.
So was this coming.
I'm so...
Oh, God, forgive me.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway.
It's 300 more years, you know.
Moria. So, Craftini crafted her lyrics that she wrote for him into a beautiful love lay for Labrade into an enchanting melody. So, together they made a gorgeous song.
Some easy mac for you, some mac and cheese. Kraft mac and cheese.
She then sent Craftini to the Gallic court where Labrade was residing with lots of expensive gifts. I'm talking linen, gold, jewels for her long lost love. And the bard made his way to Gaul and the king's court, and it was in full feasting mode. I mean, you know, their drinks, chowing down. Labrade isn't really talking much, but he's having a good
time. He's not with his words.
And during the feast, the bard presented the now hardened warrior Labrade with expensive gifts that she sent. And then the bard sang the love lay that they crafted together in front of the entire court. He rolled the dice and a nat 20 came up for his performance check. You know, nat 20 does more than just a DC check. Labrade was so moved by this enchanting song that something deep inside him broke, and the barriers to his speech were obliterated. To the shock of probably himself, the bard, and the entire court, Labrade broke out into praises for Moriath in a strong, low, booming voice that he did not recognize was coming out of his
own mouth. That was a fantastic song! What the fuck? I didn't sound like this all these years ago.
And then at the end of the feast, Labrade thanked his Gallic court for all that they had done for him, and he really enjoyed his time here, but now it's time for him to return home and
claim
what
was his.
Thank
you all for your support, but now I must return home and kill my great uncle.
They're all just
killing my family members and forcing me to eat their hearts.
They're all just sitting in shock.
He has a low, booming voice. He has a low, booming voice.
So upon to arriving King Scoriath's castle, the court was shocked when they saw a completely changed man with a commanding voice from the little traumatized adolescent boy that
Iron Gobroth, Ireland is mine.
And when he looked upon Moriath, the tension between them ignited into an invisible inferno. She was more beautiful than ever. And he was stronger
Moriath,
than ever.
Moriath, light of my life, fire of my loins.
You told me to keep the PG-13.
This is the entry line to Lolita. Come on.
To be fair, we're explicit for a reason. We're not PG-13. What I just told you that in the beginning, the first story alone would not get us into PG-13. Let's be honest here. That's more horrific than
the
that.
The sex scene described later on this episode.
The two were wed, and speaking of sex, several wild nights of intense passion to make up for lost time. Let's just say they were happy that they did not need to require Craftini's services to keep her mother sleeping, but I'm pretty sure the rest of the castle probably would have wanted his services to keep them asleep.
Let's just say, the AC/DC song "He Shook Me All Night Long" was playing the whole time.
Oh, yes, definitely. So now, with Moriath standing at his side as his wife, Labrade now had Scoriath's warriors at his back. He was also supported by the ever-faithful bard Craftini and his magical heart. Without warning, Labrade took his new forces and invaded Leinster. Quickly, his great-uncle raised forces of his own, and the two met in battle. After much bloodshed on both sides, each side couldn't get the upper hand, and they had to sign a treaty of peace.
Oh.
I know. And in the peace treaty, Labrade had just enough leverage to force his great-uncle to give him Leinster.
Well, hey, it's a start.
It is a start. And despite the treaty being signed, both sides were now conducting a pretty cold war. You know, trying to gain the upper hand on each other before
it
ignites again.
Did somebody say cold war?
I knew you would do that. Labraid received intelligence from his spies that Kobathak and the kings loyal to him were plotting in a mead hall. Somehow, without alerting the sentries, Labraid and his warriors surrounded the building and set it ablaze, creating a beacon of light.
Gondor calls for aid.
Everyone in the hall was made into char and bone. None of them survived the night. I imagine while this horrible screaming people are on fire, you have the bard Craftini just playing on his harp a nice little joyful tune in the background.
Just like Nero, burning of the mead hall.
That's the life and reign of Kobathak Kolbreg, son of Ugain Mor, foster son of Makamang Ruad, High King of Ireland.
Okay.
You ready to read
what
him?
What about Labraid? He's not dead yet.
No, he's not. We're gonna rate the Kobathak.
That's how we did it. That's how we did it last time.
We'd like to change it up every now and then.
Let's rate Kobathak. Royal power.
Sorry, Roberto. Logic doesn't take it. The narrative takes precedent. All right. How long do you think he reigned? Sources say they conflict anywhere from 30 to 50 years.
How old is Labraid? Oh, God. Okay. Labraid was old. Okay.
He was in his 40s, probably. Yeah, his 40s. I mean, this will earn him points in infamy, but faking his death so his brother visits him. Dude, that's a gutsy move,
though. Yeah, but that's going for infamy.
Dude, that's his power. That's a brilliant move. That's a gutsy move to gain power. I mean, so
at least, I'm not giving him the points I'm going to give him for infamy for that.
But being forced to give Leinster to Labraid was his downfall. You know, by giving his enemy a footland in Ireland, that gave him access to resources that were then used against
him. I'm going to give him
like a 4. I'm going to give him a 5. I think it's brilliant.
I know. I think so too.
Terrific.
But I'm trying to not give him points for that because I already have a plan of what I'm giving him for infamy. Okay. I mean, that's a 9 in royal power. Infamy. Oh my God, yes.
We're not even...
I'm not even arguing. Oh, that's a 20 for infamy. Okay, of the devotion, 0. Bardic inspiration. Ooh.
So this guy's a really good evil villain with the capital E in the story of Labraid. But other than that, he's kind of the run-of-the-mill evil man who covets the throne. I don't know. How horrifically damaging what he did is so inspirational in terms of creativity.
Okay, so
massive,
like,
points.
So I'm not going to give him the points for killing the way he killed his family members. What I'm going to give him points for is the way he did it.
That's what I mean.
I just love it. I just love the fact that it's like, oh, I've been so sick. Because who knows if you even faked his sickness? It could have just been a ploy to get his brother to drop his guard. And then he just like, he pulls what Ragnar Lothbrokleder does in history. It's just like, oh, at least in the show. And he go in Vikings, the show. And it's just like, for me, I was just like, you literally saw my face the whole time. I was like, holy fucking shit. What?
Did you see that coming?
I didn't know if you saw that coming.
I kind of assumed
that it was going to happen, but I didn't know. I thought he was going to have like people come and surround them. Not that he was going to kill them. Just like that. Not that he was going to kill them just like that. So.
Gotcha. I didn't know. I was trying to hold back as much as possible while giving you like little drips of like. Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an 8 from me.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. That's a 16 for Bardic Inspiration. Legacy.
He pretty much, him and his whole power base were roasted alive. And then sometime during his reign, he had to have sex with a woman at least once who had bore him a son named Milish.
Is that guy coming up later?
And that's all we know.
Okay. What about you?
Yeah, 0.
That's a 0 in legacy. All right. Let's give him his thing.
All right. So, should he be crowned? Oh, yeah,
so,
sorry.
Kolbreg Kolbreg with a 9 in royal power, a 20 in infamy, a 0 in oath of devotion, a 16 in bardic inspiration, a 0 in legacy. He gets a total of 45 points, which puts him in third place. So he usurps Ugain Mor's spot after after everything.
That's wild. Okay, so in the annals of history, we can go two ways. Should he be crowned as a legendary king, good enough to retire as a lesser noble? Nope, not even a possibility. Or deserve to be burned at the stake?
I
kind
of want to burn him again, just for the sake of it.
Okay, good. I think he needs to be burned. He could be legendary because what he did was extraordinary.
But
I've never
I feel
heard
like
that
just
before.
The fact that we get to burn him again makes it so much more fun.
It does. Okay. It really does.
So he's burned at the stake. I'm gonna put a note here. What a cool kill. Okay. Let's continue the narrative.
All right. As you probably guessed, we're not done yet. So after the night of the King's Roast, Labraid ascended the throne of Tara with Moriath at his side.
Wow, wow.
Passion between them burned brightly during the kingship. He impregnated her during one of their nights while they were exploring their feelings for each other. She bore him a boy confusingly named Aiel after Labraid's father.
Like from Wheel of Time, the Aiel.
I call him, I don't know how else to say it. It's A-I-L-I-L-L. So I'm going to just say Aiel. Aiel. But that's why I call him that, is because that's how I know how to pronounce Aiel from Wheel of Time.
Yeah, I love Wheel of Time.
This name's going to come up over and over and over again in Irish history.
So we probably can get a pronunciation guide for that. I'll figure it out later.
All right, that's fine. We'll go with Aiel for now. Hey, we called the Boba Chad Boba Fett.
Boba
so
Fett,
you know.
Yeah, but he may not show up in a future episode. So like,
that's true.
And this name comes up a lot.
Yeah, yeah, he does. We are not aware of any more children that come out of their union. We only know Aiel. We do know that Labraid took vengeance on Kobathak's children for their father's treachery. But that's all we know. The scribes don't care to explain in detail what that means. So besides taking vengeance on people who had nothing to do with this trauma, we are told that Labraid ruled wisely for many years to come. And at some point, long late into Labraid's rule, Kobathak's son, Melish, snuck up behind him with Nathair and assassinated the High King, completing the Wheel of Time or cycle or vengeance for our story.
This more and more death.
That's the epic life and reign of Labraid the Mariner Who Speaks, son of Aiel, son of Loghaire Lor, King of Leinster, King of Ireland, High King of Ireland.
Royal power.
All right, so how long do you think he reigned?
10 years.
Sources say somewhere between 9
That's
and 30.
That's a big range.
It is a big range. Welcome to Irish history.
Okay.
He knew it wasn't wise for him to show himself building, you know, himself up in Ireland. So he got out of there and trained to Gaul, which was a pretty smart move. His marriage to Moriath secured a large army for himself that he was able to use to seize power. And once he was king, he managed to rule for a pretty long time.
Okay. I'm going to give him an 8 because he managed to build up that power base. Yeah. He did it in secret, and then he used it to basically usurp his great uncle from the throne.
I mean, he came from
literally
nothing.
He could even
negative
talk.
Nothing.
Like, and then he built himself up to be able to do all of this. So a 16 for royal power sounds nice. Infamy.
So taking vengeance on Kobathak's children isn't the greatest thing to do, but it could be the scribe's way of saying he perceived eliminated threats. Again, I don't know if I can give infamy for even like kinslaying later on or even this episode.
But like
it's
he
just...
burnt a ale house down with
oh,
all
that's true.
His...
That, but I don't know. That's normal.
But the way, it's just the way not... I don't mind giving him points for this because it's just like the way they do it. You know, if they just like, oh yeah, if we have to use Nathair for this, then I can understand, and that's like nothing. But if we get detail for it, that's a difference.
That's
so,
true.
I want to give him like a 5 for that, and then add 2 more points for all those secret things he did with Moriath. So
ooh,
that's a 7
gotcha.
For me for infamy.
You think that's scandalous what he did? Yeah.
It's very scandalous.
Pretty, I didn't even think of that.
Because then she couldn't, you know, if they decided they weren't right for each other. She would have been be spoiled as a princess.
Yeah, Yeah. I don't know. Ireland
it
has
does, but you know,
the reason I say that is because of the Ulster cycle that I'm into later has people who don't
okay,
care
but,
about that.
You know, I'm just used to like the traditional, like, so.
Yeah, I know. Again, we're going to learn Irish is very different than any history
yeah.
you have ever learned. Completely different. I'll say all of the reasons you say,
okay,
I'll give them
fine.
A 5.
So that is a 12. No. 7 plus. Yeah, 12 for infamy. Oath of Devotion. 0.
Nada.
That's going to be it for a while. Bardic Inspiration.
His tale could be adapted into a movie or a TV series. It would fit beautifully in the fucked up world of Game of Thrones. His love story with Moriath is one of the great romances.
This is a 10 for me.
Yeah,
it's just
easy
like,
10.
He actually has like a story, a nice start and end. Or like not so nice, but like you can literally start his whole story with like Kalthax like taking power in a movie.
This is the most complete story we have had yet.
And like you can literally start a story with Kalthax taking power and end it with him being stabbed by whatever his face is, Kalthax's son or whatever.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, this is the most complete story we're going to get until the Ulster cycle.
Ooh,
so
okay. Anyways, that's a 20 for Bardic Inspiration. All right, Legacy.
So Labraid is considered one of the great ancestor figure of Leinster, later described by the later medieval tribe of Lagan, L-A-G-H-I-N. His line continues with his son Aiel, whose story will continue after Labraid's death. But he is a massive ancestor. One of the big names, Labraid Loinsec, is incredibly well known.
I'm going to give him a... I'm thinking a 6.
I'm thinking an 8, because it's... Leinster is one of the big...
Isn't that where Dublin
provinces,
is?
And he is considered... Let me look.
Yeah, it's in, yeah, right, Dublin's in Leinster. Though. Yeah, I'm going to give him an 8. Hell yeah.
Yeah, so, you know...
So, yeah. Yeah, this would be great. Aiel. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, so that's a 16 for Legacy. Alrighty, time for his total points. A 16 for Royal Power, a 12 for Infamy, a 20 for Bardic Inspiration, a 0 for Oath of Devotion, and a 16 for Legacy gives him a total score of 64 points, putting him in second place.
Behind?
Gundobad.
Oh, so out of all of them. So he's highest Irish king.
Yeah. Why is... Oh, I messed up. I messed this up. Okay. Let me fix this really quick. I messed up the scoring earlier. So basically, the top three are still number one, Gundobad, number two, Labraid Loingsec, and number three, Makamong Ruath.
Yeah, I love her. She's so much fun. There's a reason I chose her reign as the number is what we started off with. All right, speaking of our Labraid Loingsec, in the annals of history, should he be crowned as a legendary king, or a legendary king?
I think he should be burned at the stake.
Yeah.
it's been gold for a while.
Yeah, legendary king. Like, no
questions.
I will
say, out of our top five, four of them are the Irish kings.
I mean, yeah, they're so much more fun. I am so excited for this series. Every time I get to research this nonsense, it's just like, and they did that?
I can't wait to see who is so amazing that they just top Gundobad. So that'll be a great time. Okay. So yeah, so congratulations, Labraid Loingsec. You are a legendary monarch, and you basically destroyed your great uncle in points. Yes, you dropped him from number two, from number three to number four.
There we go.
So
that brings us to the end of Kolbathac Kolbreg and Labraig Loingsec. let us know what you thought of both of them. Do you agree with our rating, burning of Kolbathak and High King or Legendary King of Labraid? You can reach us on Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. We are also on Roberto's domain, Twitter, which he refers to never X, at Quest4PowerPod, or we're on this weird thing called Blue Sky,
where we are at the Quest for Power Pod.
The podcast is researched and scripted by Michael, myself, and edited by Roberto. It takes a lot to research, produce, and edit these episodes.
Apologies.
But we love doing
it. The Quest for Power.
Support the show.
BlueSky.social.
It takes a lot of research to produce these episodes, but we love doing it. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a member of our royal court at thequestforpower.com to come hang out with us on Discord and gain exclusive access to extra episodes. Our first members episode will be on the campaign Curse of Power, which we rate and review all the kings and queens of Egypt. That's not your thing. That's cool. If you give us a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice or telling someone about us, goes a long way. Next episode, we're going to continue this vicious cycle of vengeance of bloodshed with the reign of Melage.
Editing Roberto here. This will be the last one of the arc.
If you can't wait to hear what happens next, you can click right to that next episode right now if you're a member of the nobility. With that, the king is dead. Kings are dead.
Long live the king.
Insert music here. Hello, I'm Fry.
And I'm Bree. That's quite the outtakes. Yeah.